you know, when Wayne on Waynesville gets his show bought by the big company, and they have to have Noah Vanderhoff on, the sponsor of the show, the players advert. It's like that. The sponsors come on, Dan's come back on. We've got to tell him how it is now, and blah blah blah.
It's hip. It's cool. Noah's arcade.
What's that? What's the best game at the moment? Oh yeah, Desert Storm Commando Warrior. Ah yes, above that limited skirmish in the Middle East. Yeah. He hasn't got a clue.
I was watching Christmas Vacation the other night, and I forgot he's in it, isn't he?
He is, as the horrible boss. Yeah. I'm reinstating the bonuses of all the lousy you waste to make a buck, Mister. That's low. If I had a hose, I'd beat you. What? That cover just told it like it is. Oh my god!
Such a good film. I'm just crying all the way through it.
So good.
Even like just my favourite bit where he staples his sleeve to the gutter.
Yeah, and he goes flying off.
And he rips it off, and he falls back on the ladder.
It's a great film. Yeah, I love the nod to the nod to Friday the 13th. You know, when he comes out the garage with the chainsaw and the hockey mask on.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
He goes, "Hey Griswold, where are you going to put that thing? Bend over and I'll show you. You can't talk to me like that. I wasn't talking to you."
Oh my god.
It's so good.
It is good. I guess, I don't know, I guess I'll just kick off straight away and get the intro out the way and just we'll see how it goes. Yeah. Hello everyone, what's going on? I hope you're well today. Welcome back to I Give That 10 Minutes. I'm still amazed that it's season 3. I know I keep saying it every episode, but it's still a milestone. Every episode I do is a milestone. And I'm still churning them out, and I'm still so grateful for everyone who's listening to me. So for those of you who are, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have people tuning in. And I've had a few new listeners come on as well, so it's nice to get some acknowledgements from new listeners who are discovering the show for the first time. So yeah, welcome to all. Today's episode, I'm going to rediscover a cult classic. It's a personal favourite of mine, one of my all-time favourite films. And my guest who's joining me, again, a fan favourite of his as well. You all know my guest is coming on. He's our proud sponsor, the mighty Dan of Stuff of Kings. So without further ado, please give a warm welcome to Stuff of Kings' very own Mr. Dan Kelly. Hello, sir.
Hello, Dave. How the bloody hell are we, sunshine?
I am recovering from a hangover, self-inflicted, because I saw a rock gig. Hence the slight huskiness in my voice, maybe, because I've got a sore throat.
The sexy huskiness of the sore throat.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I went into Liverpool to the Cavern Club, a venue I've never been to before, to watch Fozzy, a really cool rock band from America, fronted by wrestler Chris Jericho, who's something of a legend to me. I've followed his work for many years and I've been a big fan. So it was nice to combine, you know, a classic venue that has had multiple artists go in there and has like a really big fan following, and a band that's done really well, both overseas and over here, in terms of fandom. So it was a great gig, but sadly I shouted too loud when I was singing and I drank too much beer, so I'm feeling a bit rough. But if it brings the sexiness out, then I'll go with it. I'll just go with it.
Channeling that inner body white by the side.
Yes, yes. We'll keep that for later. We are going to be chatting about the great John Carpenter movie, Big Trouble in Little China. A cult, iconic, essential movie in anybody's collection. And one that I dare say must be seen by everybody at least 6 times. At least.
I fully agree.
Yeah.
Metacritic, however, may disagree. I just pulled up the kind of, what should we say, the stats on the movie here.
Yeah.
So we've got IMDb giving it 7.3 out of 10.
It's not a bad review.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I was expecting somewhere around an 8.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we?
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes is 74%, so similar to IMDb. But Metacritic, 53%.
What? Come on. Metacritic, have you actually watched the film or have you just read the synopsis? Come on, guys, really?
I think these people are Tories.
Oh, and now we've gone down the politics tangent of the show. Dan, of course, is our proud sponsor. As I've mentioned in, well, episodes previous to this one, he is the man behind Stuff of Kings, a great art-based company providing great prints of various kind of pop culture reference kind of images. It's amazing. Get to the website, stuffofkings.co.uk. There'll be lots of information about the site and what kind of images they can give you. But those people who know me know that there's exclusivity with this particular sponsor of mine because he's very generously given us a code. And before we get into the movie, while we are doing promotional stuff, Dan, if you'd like to tell everyone about this special code and what it achieves when they go to your website.
So if you go to my website, stuffofkings.co.uk, It will redirect it to my Etsy store. I just thought it sounded a bit more professional to have my own domain.
Yes.
On there, you can get art prints, you can get pin badges, you can get mugs. There's a few various different things you can purchase from my shop.
Okay.
But yes, there is a code for all the listeners out there. If you use the code DAVA10 at the checkout, then you'll get money off whatever you're buying.
Money off. Are you listening to me, everybody? You get money off by being a fan of this podcast. I mean, what more do you need in life? Things cheaper at Christmas time. Come on. Come on, it's perfect. Incidentally, this is being recorded and the run-up to Christmas. I know we're going to be airing it afterwards, but...
But hey, it's never too early to start for Christmas.
Exactly. You know, Christmas 2022. Stock up now. Use that discount code and get a bit of money back, and you're all very welcome. So that's the plug. That's the shameless plug provided by the sponsor, because he's here. The sponsor's on. We've got to make sure we mention the website, because the sponsor's on. He's not just a sponsor, everyone. Obviously, he's a friend of the show and a friend of mine, but it's nice to get his back scratched in the form of some business going his way. So please, check his website out. We have come together to chat about this great movie, Big Trouble in Little China, which came out in 1986, which was a fantastic year for films. The Mighty Ghostbusters came out the same year. You know, two fantastic kind of supernatural action comedies. Obviously, different ends of the spectrum, but with a supernatural tone running through both of them.
Yeah, and I think with Big Trouble in Little China as well, it's a weird one, because my missus was watching it with me when I was having a rewatch.
Yeah.
And she was just sat watching it like, I don't even know what's going on. It's sort of like a weird combination. Like, it kind of starts off, you've got Egg Shen.
And
he's talking to that lawyer, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's talking to him about all the mystery and like the Chinese black magic and things like that. And he's got that little pulse of electricity in his hands to prove to him that it's real. But if you've never seen a film before, you're watching like, what the hell's going on here? And then when it starts, it's like sort of like a action/comedy almost.
Yeah, definitely.
Because like obviously Kurt Russell was playing Jack Burton, and he is just that kind of like charismatic, sort of arrogant, alcoholic truck driver. But he brings, Kurt Russell brings like a really good comedy element to it. And
definitely.
When you first watch it and when it all starts kicking off, you're like, well, what was to do with that lightning thing at the beginning? Like, this is like a comedy action. I don't understand. And yeah, it just goes a bit west, doesn't it?
It does. It's a very strange movie. Those of you who haven't seen it, it revolves around the aforementioned Jack Burton, who stumbles across this war between rival Chinese gangs and a supernatural entity known as Lo Pan, with minions all over the place and lots of martial arts and crazy wire work and iconic looking characters. It was still influential now. You know, some of the characters used in that film influenced games such as Mortal Kombat, for example. Big influences on them. It shows that it's visually something that you can still relate to now. And yeah, Kurt Russell is considered the comedy element of the film, even though he's the main headliner. We're kind of taken on this journey through Jack's eyes to this world of, you know, supernatural ghosts and, you know, spooky magic and war between rival gangs and all these kind of crazy things going on, which develops as the movie goes. It all starts off very harmlessly in a dock and a few guys just betting and making money. And then it all goes west, like you said, when the counterpart of Jack Burton, Wang, has his girlfriend kidnapped. Well, he doesn't have her kidnapped, but Miao Yin, his girlfriend's travelling over to meet him, to reunite, and she gets kidnapped by, oh my God, what are they called? What's the gang called? The Lords of Death.
The Lords of Death.
With those really cool sunglasses, the plastic ones with the three lines going through it. And we all had them as kids. They were kind of like the Macho Man glasses kind of thing. Kidnap his girlfriend, and then the chase begins, and they stumble across Chinatown in San Francisco, where it all goes crazy. I mean,
absolutely
bananas. The initial kind of few scenes, the initial like 20 minutes or so, it's just insane. You've got high speed chases, you've got a guy who pulls this ridiculous knife out of his pocket, and we don't know where it came from. Even Jack says, "Where'd you get that?" Just pulls it out. It's funny, it's action packed, it's got a really good storyline behind it, the characters are amazing, and
the soundtrack as well.
It's heavily, '80s. It is.
Directed by John Carpenter and the soundtrack by John Carpenter.
The man is a legend.
If you're a fan of John Carpenter and you haven't seen this film, what have you been doing? Would you like?
Exactly. I mean, the man created such icons as The Thing, Halloween, which are still being remade, redone, rebooted, and having big nods to now. But
also, let's not forget the fact that he also made the excellent Kurt Russell movie Escape from New York as well.
Of course, yeah. Maybe not Escape from LA. Of course, They Live as well.
Probably the best. Yeah, They Live. So let's not forget that one. And let's also not forget the best horror film, in my opinion, of all time.
Are you a friend to Prince of Darkness?
Yeah.
I thought you might be.
Oh, Jeepers Creepers, Dave.
Wow. That went down the wrong tangent, didn't it? Oh, my God. John Carpenter, though, what an amazing director. He's got such a vision of what he wants to see on screen. And it comes across like the guy, even like now he looks like Lopan. It's almost like Lopan's modelled on his own image kind of thing.
Yeah. But I think the good thing about him doing the soundtracks is that obviously he's directed it. Someone's written it.
Yeah.
He's directed it.
Yeah.
And what he's done there, obviously directors take that story, interpret it in their way on the big screen. Mm. And I think because he interprets the movie, that probably helps him in doing the soundtrack. Yeah. Rather than employing someone else to come and do it, he's like, right, okay, this is the feel I want for the film. This is how it's going to sound.
Yeah. It's and very
no
kind
matter
of...
what film it is you watch.
Yeah.
It works.
He's got really a good kind of musicality. Like he knows if he wants like an eerie sound, there's an eerie sound being played, or, you know, 80s kind of techno rock or something like that.
Yeah.
He knows where to place it.
So when I watched Escape from New York again recently, you know, obviously you've done the soundtrack for that as well. And it's just, it's similar to The Warriors.
Yeah.
When the soundtrack starts, it just sets the feel and the pace for the entire movie.
Escape from New York is fantastic. It really is.
It's a brilliant film. At the minute, we're nearly beginning of December, I've almost finished my Escape from New York poster now.
Oh, it's a really cool piece of artwork, guys. When it gets unveiled, it's going to blow your minds. I've been seeing little teasers of how the progress is going on it, and it's insane how good it's going to be.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you very much.
Hey, no problem. I've got to keep the sponsor happy.
Hopefully by the time this one goes out, my Big Trouble in Little China piece will be done as well.
Oh man, don't tempt me, because I'll already put a pre-order in right now. That's got to be on my wall somewhere, though, definitely. So this movie, obviously, it goes down some crazy kind of tangents, some crazy adventures that, you know, Jack and Wang go on. Yeah. Once they follow the Lords of Death to try and recapture Miao Yun, who's been kidnapped, they go down that alleyway in Chinatown and are stopped because there's that war between the two rival gangs, which kicks off because of the aforementioned funeral.
Yeah.
I love how it's all peaceful, it's all quiet. There's, you know, signs of respect there while this coffin's being brought in. And then suddenly, out come these poles from the coffin, they turn into weapons, and then it just kicks off.
Yeah.
Proper.
See, I thought that bit, I forgot about that bit where the poles from the coffin turn into the weapons. And when they drop the coffin and they slide them out, I'm like, oh, I forgot about this. Yeah. It's getting epic.
It just goes crazy. And, like, you know, people are getting thrown through walls, through windows, people are getting kicked in the face. It's just like a proper gang warfare, but, you know, Chinese style.
Loads of martial arts.
Yeah.
I mean, there's gunfire. They pull out some machine guns and pistols, and there's a bit of gunfire in that, but it's the close combat, hand to hand, and it's like, I think it looks really well choreographed. Like, I'm not the biggest martial arts movie fan, but to me, it looks really well choreographed. You know what I mean?
To get that many sort of guys in one room or one studio and have them choreographed, and they've all got to react in the same way. It's a difficult thing to do, and it comes across really well. You'd actually believe it's a genuine fight. I mean, it is a genuine fight. We know this is a documentary. It's not fiction. God, no.
Of course.
But so many, like, great martial artists in there. And they have that classic henchman who's been in everything, including Last Action Hero and Die Hard. And sadly, his name eludes me, but he's got that little kind of, little black kind of goatee moustache, and he's got the bald head, but the long black hair at the side.
Yeah.
It's like, he's always a henchman in most films, but he's really cool in that. And I say they're all fighting away, and Jack and Wang are in this truck while it's all happening around this lorry. Incidentally, one of the greatest names for a vehicle ever.
The Pork Chop Express.
It's a great truck. It's something I idolized as a kid. It was a great, like, on a poster. It just looked cool. It's cool. I mean, it's just your kind of standard, like, big rig. But I don't know, something about it. The classic white, the little thin blue kind of lines going with the piping and the pork chop. Obviously, the logo. It just looked cool. It was a great truck.
The mud flap girl on the front with the hole and ass.
Oh, man. It must be a great company to work for. But this is all happening. You know, we see all these guys throwing each other around. It's just violence everywhere. And then we are hit with this massive explosion sound, and a big ball of green light appears, separating all the rival gangs from fighting. And three infamous characters appear from the green light. Well, I say three, one starts. And these characters are known as...
The Three Storms.
These characters who were the inspiration for the Mortal Kombat character Raiden. Sport various powers, including, you know, thundery powers, the power of using rain with great, you know, technical, like, martial arts, and, you know, unleashing lightning upon people. But it's three separate guys. We have Thunder arise first, then we have Rain who comes down with his long flowing hair and his long legs, and then Lightning comes down on a beam of lightning.
On to a beam of lightning.
I mean, what a cool entrance, just to be able to hold lightning and slide down on it.
Yeah.
It just looked fantastic. They bring out all those weapons and they just start taking out all these bad guys one by one. Well, the rival gangs, I should say. And it just goes from there. It's like what starts off as like a kind of heist movie or kidnapping movie becomes this weird supernatural battle scene in an alleyway. And it only goes weirder from there. I mean, I was blown away up to that bit. I was like, what's going on? And when those storms arrived, it was, I don't know what I'm watching, but I'm enjoying it.
It just go like, kind of hits like from 0 to 60.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like
3 seconds. and then like there's the odd small bit where it slows down the pace a little bit, and then it brings you back in, and it slows down a little, brings you back in, and like you never know when it's going to stop.
Yeah, exactly.
It's relentless. It's absolutely relentless.
I mean, it's like it's during the early, you know, 20 minutes or so of the film, and you're being treated to, you know, car chases, truck chases, great martial arts sequences, strange looking characters, and it, like I say, it only goes up from there. They have to escape. Jack and Wang escape in the truck, get past all the storms, who move out the way, and they're greeted with this menacing looking ancient Chinese guy by the name of Lo Pan, who is ridden over by the truck. He's beckoning him to run him over. Runs him over, he gets out the truck, and of course he's still there, because what we find out later in the movie is that Lo Pan is actually not real. He's actually a ghostly image, so things can pass through him. The whole premise of this is that he's kidnapping Miao Yin because she has green eyes, which is rare apparently, and he wants to sacrifice her to be able to form a ritual and get his flesh and bone back and become real again. That's kind of the backstory. He's kidnapping her so he can sacrifice her to, you know, appease his gods and get, you know, flesh and bone back and become real and take over the world with his magic. So
he needs to marry her, and then...
Yeah, sorry, yeah, I left the important part of the marriage.
Marry him first.
That's right, yeah.
And sacrifice her
to
get his, like, physical being back.
That's right,
but don't forget that when Kim Cattrall comes into it as well.
Yes, Gracie Law.
Gracie Law, yeah. And he wants a bit of her, doesn't he?
I mean, in a heyday, everybody wants the piece of Kim Cattrall. I mean, I'm thinking back to Police Academy, Porky's, Big Trouble in Little China, and others. She was quite the temptress back in the day.
Mannequin.
Oh, Mannequin? Mannequin.
What a movie.
She was great. I loved it on Police Academy when she's kind of facing forward and Mahoney's pretending he's like a captain. And he's like, what size are your thighs? And she's like, excuse me, what are your thighs? Check the thighs out. Can you describe them for me? And she's like, well, they're luxuriant and soft to the touch. And he's just like, because he can't have it. But she's just teasing with him. But yeah, she was definitely up there as one of the best kind of femme fatales back in the day. So it seemed logical that Carpenter would pick her, because she was quite high in the rankings in terms of, like, you know, Hollywood actresses who were stepping up, as it were.
Yeah.
But
she's brilliant in that film as well.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I like about that. Well, I kind of like about that film.
Cool.
But some people might hate about that film.
Yeah.
When somebody comes into the room and they literally, like, explain who they are.
What the hell is Gracie Law doing here?
She's like, I'm Grace Law. I'm a lawyer.
I'm just, you know, putting my head to the ground, keeping an eye on everything. Okay, so you're telling us what the reason you're here. I suppose that's taken as a comedic thing. You know, you don't know everyone's backstory, so if they come in and announce themselves, this is who they are. You get a brief origin story for a few seconds.
What I quite liked about that, because when I've watched the film in the past, I've never really noticed it.
Mm.
But I noticed it when I was rewatching it, and I was like, it makes it feel like a comic book movie.
Yeah.
Like, it makes it feel like more of a comic book movie, because obviously a character's going to come in, they're going to introduce a character in a comic book, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's going to be like, I'm this person and I do this in whatever way, shape or form they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And like, these people come in and it's the exact same thing. It was like, it really feels like a comic book, and like how kind of over the top a lot of the things are.
Mm.
like it feels like a comic book movie.
It does. With all these kind of weird looking characters and action, it's like you say, it's very comic booky. It would look well in a graphic novel. I'd happily read it because I bet it would be fantastic. I know they have done a crossover of Big Trouble crossing over to Escape from New York with a tie-in, and you have Jack and Plissken teaming up together.
That sounds amazing.
I think it was a run of maybe six comics, something like that. It was a short run, but there's definitely a Big Trouble in Little China meets Escape from New York. It's weird though because obviously they're both played by the same actor, so when you see them drawn on a comic book and they've got the same face and everything, it's kind of like, okay. Yeah. But it works. It's an interesting idea having them being a crossover, and I know I've seen references to Big Trouble in like not fairly recently, but quite recently, there was like a Ninja Turtles cartoon, and there was a Lopan style character in it. There was a Storms style character in it.
Yeah.
And obviously, like I said, it influences games like Mortal Kombat and stuff with the powers that these like raiding with electricity and the big basket kind of hat that they had on. But again, it's iconic. It's something you can watch now, and it's still enjoyable. Yeah. I think that's the thing with John Carpenter. When he makes a movie, it stands the test of time.
They've got like, I mean, some people might look at them and think they've aged, but if you look at them for the time they were made, you can definitely enjoy the story of them anyway.
Yeah.
Even if you look at them, I don't know, maybe they weren't intended to be as funny as you find certain parts of them.
Yeah.
You know, and they are a little bit cheesy now. But when you look at the film and look at like the set pieces, look at the special effects. I mean, Big Trouble in Little China, look at the practical effects, didn't it?
Amazing. Lots of puppet work, lots of wire work. You know, it was all practical stuff. There wasn't really any CGI back then. You know, there were some obviously visual effects and stuff like that, but it was a lot of practical stuff, and it looks amazing even now.
And I think if you can appreciate a film for the time it was made, I think that helps a lot in a film becoming a cult classic.
Yeah
Like some people say, like, oh, cult classic is a film that's like stood the test of time, but there's a lot of cult classics that maybe haven't stood the test of time but have that like that really nice quality to them of the era, of the time.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them.
It's a great movie. And like I said, John Carpenter knows what he's doing. Everything he's made has been, you know, memorable. It's been considered cult. It's been considered iconic. It's quotable. There's a lot of lines that, you know, Jack Burton has, even in the initial scenes when he's on his CB and he's just shooting the world to rights, and for anyone that's listening, and he's just telling people his opinions on things. And you think, this guy just doesn't care. He just tells you what he thinks of life and what's going on in the world and deal with it. You know what I mean? Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yeah, the check's in the mail. Take that.
Yeah.
Take that establishment. You know what I mean? He just doesn't care.
Like you say, it's all in the reflexes.
It's all in the reflexes. And he does show certain reflexes a bit too late in the day. There's that scene when they're all armed, ready to take on Lopan, and he's got his little machine gun, and it all kicks off, and he jumps out and goes, ha, and shoots a gun in the air, and of course the wall collapses on him and knocks him out. You know, it's like, okay, he just wakes up and it's all over. Oh, what happened? Oh, no.
Well, it's the first time he tries to shoot him, it doesn't do anything. Yeah. The guy's like, safety.
It's so good. I love the, because Jack's obviously hasn't got a clue what's going on. He doesn't understand, you know, ghosts and monsters and magic and this kind of thing. So again, he's like our representative of going into this world. But when him and Wang go disguised as phone repair guys into Lopan's domain, and there's all this Chinese writing on like a lift door and stuff like that. And I think Wang says something like, it says like, you know, hell of boiling oil or something like that. Is that what it says? No, it just says open or something like that. It just like shoots them down. Like he could have told him anything, but he fell for it. He fell for the winds up. I loved, obviously, when you see the three storms in their kind of, you know, their battle gear, the big wicker basket on their head, their weapons and so on. When it flips the coin and it goes to them in normal, you know, civilian clothing, because this is all a front. Yeah. They're all disguised in a business and stuff. I thought that was a cool spin on it, because although these guys are like otherworldly and scary and whatnot, put them in a suit and they look like regular businessmen, and you get that from like watching Guyver. You know, they're all like, the Zoonoids are all disguised as humans running a big multi-billion dollar business, but you cross them, they turn to these big mutated beasts and stuff. So
I must say, I've never seen Guyver, but that's sold it to me.
Well, there you go. I mean, I'd steer clear of the live action movies, because they were pretty goddamn awful. Although, yeah. Guy of a Dark Hero, the sequel, was portrayed by the mighty David Hayter. So, those of you who don't know, he's the voice of Solid Snake from the Metal Gear Solid franchise, who is also inspired by Snake Plissken of Escape from New York, of course, because he's called Plissken and Snake, of course. Yeah. So, you could watch it just for the nerdiness of watching David Hayter. But the actual film itself is awful. The premise, for those of you who don't know what Guyver is, it's a guy who gets given bio armor, so it's embedded into his body. And when he summons it, it covers him in this armor and he becomes a superhero. Kind of looks a bit like a kind of a Robocop kind of guy, you know, big armor and stuff like that. But fights these aliens called Zoonoids who disguise themselves as humans, run a big multi-billion-dollar company, a bit like Umbrella, for lack of a better reference. And they want to get this armor out this guy so they can use it for themselves. So yeah, it's the anime stuff's much better. The graphic novels and stuff like that are really good. But the live-action films, there was two of them. One featuring Mark Hamill as well. But they weren't worth watching, in my opinion. Obviously, this is just my own opinion. But give Guyver a try. Why not? Something different. But we have just gone off the track there. We were discussing Big Trouble in the China, and we went to the Guyver. So we're getting back on track. What stands out to some of your favourite moments in the film?
Well, one bit that we've already spoken about is when the storms first come in.
Yeah, it's a great introduction to them.
Brilliant entrance that I absolutely love. You know, that weird fairy monster thing.
Oh, like it's like a kind of a Bigfoot Yeti kind of character, big fangs and stuff.
Yeah. And when it robs off with Gracie Law.
Just jumps down the hole and she's perfectly fine.
Yeah. But there's all like little bits in it that I'd done a Big Trouble in Little China piece like when I was in uni. I actually done a project on the movies of Kurt Russell.
Oh, yeah.
Because it said to me, tutor, I wanted to do something to do with movies. And he was like, please don't do John Carpenter because John Carpenter is so overdone. And I was all right, so I said, I'll get back to you. Came back to him, I was like, right, I've come up with an idea. I said, what's that? I said, I'm going to do the movies of Kurt Russell. And he just looked at me and he went, go on. I said, Escape from New York, Big Trouble in Little China, and The Thing.
Nice.
And he went, what I said? I said, you said no John Carpenter movies. I'm doing Kurt Russell movies.
It's a loophole, and I'm glad you exploited it.
Yes. But the bit I was going to say about it is like, there's a little bit that I don't think really stick in people's minds.
Yeah.
When I was doing that piece, there's the bit where they're all walking through the sewer.
Yeah.
And you see, like, something in the water. And the next thing, that big giant head of, like, a sharp-toothed eel or something, like, just comes straight out the wall.
Yeah.
Grabs him, Wang's mate, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Drags him in. Is it Wang? I think it's
Wang's mate. I don't think it's the guy that was in the restaurant. I think it's one of the good guys, one of the clan.
It's one of the clan, but yeah, like that comes out the wall. Like I don't think it's something that really sticks out in people's minds. Yeah. But I incorporated that into the illustration because like I love those little bits that aren't really in the film a lot.
Yeah,
like I like the what's it called now? Is it the Watcher? The little thing with the eyes.
Oh yeah, so like Lopan's kind of like eyes around the world. It's a big floating ball with loads of eyes on it. Even it's I think hasn't his tongue got like an eye as well when he's licking himself? It might have an eye on it, but he's covered in eyes.
When watching him at first, like its mouth's like open.
Yeah.
And it's got like an eyeball in its mouth.
That's right, yeah.
And then like later on it's licking itself, it's got an eyeball on the end of it. It's
practical effects as well. It looked amazing.
Yeah, exactly. But I love those two bits and I like the bit when they're bringing out Gracie Law and Miao Yin.
Yeah.
The headdresses that they want are amazing. When obviously Lo Pan's about to have the wedding and they've got them really nice headdresses on, like the costumes there are just amazing. I love that. And I love the backdrop in that room where you've got the big skull, which is like the neon lights.
Yeah, it's a really good
image. And there's the other character that looks like Goro from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
There's like a big it's like a statue or something of a character that looks like that with neon lights around it as well.
Again, influential.
And it's just like those kind of bits that stand out to me because of like the set pieces or because of the special effects. And
yeah.
Obviously the things that are going on at the time in those scenes. But rather than like particular parts of the movie that really stand out.
Yeah.
It's like the set pieces and the costumes and like we said, there's the practical effects and things like that that are what stand out more to me.
Absolutely. I fully agree. I mean, visually, like I say, it looks amazing. Costume design, fantastic. The set design, amazing. Kurt Russell's outfit is very basic. It's just a vest, jeans, and knife boots. And yet, Jack Burton looks amazing. You all want that vest with that lovely iconic imagery on it. You want to have the little knife boots. The knife boots? Yeah. The boot knife. Not a knife boot. You want the boot knife. And it looks cool. It's a great, yeah. He's got the classic trucker's hat with the padded front, which I sported many years ago. Not that I was a trucker, but I did have trucker hats. It looked awful, but there you go. But yeah, the costumes, like you say, they're really intricate in certain scenes, and you can tell that they've done a lot of work in making them look good. Like, even the Storms themselves, they look like very kind of basic kind of costumes. You know, a few yeah. sequins here, maybe a bit of chainmail or something like that. But they look fantastic. It's the unusual aspect of wearing like this upturned basket across their heads, so they look like they were in a lampshade or something. I didn't get it. I just didn't get what it meant, but you couldn't have it any other way. If they just turned up on a remake, which I know is apparently planned, and they just had, like, you know, just no hats on, or they had a very small wicker basket on their head or something, it would look awful. It has to be that oversized, covering their pretty much top half, massive basket hat. It just looks cool.
Yeah. I think you can tell that he done the research when they were, like, coming up with the costumes as well. Like, obviously, you're not just going to throw something like that together, but you can tell, like, there was a lot of research went into it to get really good costumes to, like, kind of give that feel to the movie, to have that kind of, like, it's got, like, a sort of what your class, or what I suppose what you'd see as, like, a classic Chinese aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah.
But with, like, the kind of darker supernatural side, if you look at the likes of, like, Lopan's hat and, like, his dark robe, like, they really, really work together.
I think,
like I say, you can tell they've done a lot of research on it. I mean, have you ever seen a film Blown Cub and Wolf?
Can't say I have, no.
Or Shogun Assassin, in fact.
Yes. Or
Shogun Assassin. Have you seen Shogun Assassin?
A long time ago, but yes.
So I don't know if you'll remember, but there's a part in that where there's guys in the desert and they've got them big hats on.
Ah, okay.
Like, under the sand. They've, like, dug holes in the sand.
Okay, yeah.
And they've got them hats on, and the sand are covering. The sand's covering the hats.
That's clever.
And then they, like, pop out of the sand to, like, fight them.
So do you reckon that may have been influential for Big Trouble in Little China?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Shogun Assassin was 1980.
Okay.
So it was 6 years before, so it is a good possibility that it influenced it.
I think one of the key elements of this film, with it, how it works, is the comedy aspect. And obviously, Kurt Russell being the main comedic part of the movie.
Yeah.
I think without that element of comedy, I don't think it would have worked. Yes, it'd be action-packed and spooky with great characters and visuals and whatnot, but you need that, you know, what the hell is going on kind of outlook on the whole situation. And he does a fantastic job, Kurt Russell.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more with you on that one.
Do you think you could imagine anyone else playing Jack Burton? And I know any actor could have started that film and it could have been their role, but thinking back, if you had the opportunity to go back to 86 and redo it, would you cast somebody else, do you think? I don't know if it'd work. I don't know.
No.
He's that kind of actor where he is that embodiment of that person.
It's like it feels like it was written for him.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, with it being obviously that good connection between Kurt Russell and John Carpenter, they featured together in a lot of his films. He's a good actor that can do a lot of different characters, and it's props to himself. He keeps coming back to do John Carpenter movies because he's a good actor who's got a good rapport with the director and can portray really well on screen. It just shows the chemistry they've got together.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say was he's obviously done a few films with John Carpenter, and I wonder if when John Carpenter's, like, read the script, is he automatically thought, hey, Kurt Russell would do good at this?
So, like, I reckon it might be.
Made the role for Kurt Russell then.
I reckon that's quite likely. Like, it's such a good combo, Carpenter and Russell. It sounds like some kind of shop or a solicitor's or something, but I'd happily get a contract with Carpenter and Russell because it just sounds epic. But it's great. It's for those of you who haven't seen it, it's a strange movie because, you know, like, it's weird if you're not a fan of, like, you know, martial arts movies or supernatural kind of content or comedy that's more American than what you would maybe get over here, then maybe it's not for you. But if you like memorable characters and really cool scenes and an interesting backstory. It's a win-win. It's one of those films that I happily rediscover any time of the year. It's not like it's Halloween, put Big Trouble in Little China on. I could watch it at Christmas, I could watch it at New Year, I could watch it on my birthday. There's no time of the year to watch it. It's just a good all-round movie.
Yeah, it's one of those films that if you just want something fun with a load of action,
yeah,
something that's going to make you laugh, something that's just going to keep you watching from start to finish,
yeah,
that you can just enjoy. You don't even need to look into it that deep, mm-hmm. thinking about, like, you know, like the Chinese black magic, and like they always talk about like different layers of hell on it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Hell of the upside down sinners and hell of boiling oil and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of hells. He says, there's a lot of hells. Yeah.
There's a lot of layers of hell. Chinese have a lot of layers of hell. But yeah, you don't even need to like watch it for like those kind of aspects of it. If it's your first watch of it, don't worry about any of that stuff. Literally, put it on, sit back, and just enjoy it.
Enjoy the ride. And speaking of enjoying rides, we've kind of bypassed the glue that holds the good guys together, which is the mighty Egg Shen, who, of course, rides the San Francisco Chinatown tour bus. Starts the movie. Say again.
Egg Foo Young Tour.
And the whole kind of story is told from his perspective. The intro to the movie is Egg Shen and a lawyer talking about the fact that there's been chaos in Chinatown, mentioning green flame like we talked about earlier, and city blocks being blown up and stuff. So I assume there'd be a side story of what, you know, why he's gone to court, why he's been sued or whatever it might be, and what the ramifications of that particular court case would have been. We don't see any of that. Obviously, it's just the action that built up to that initial scene at the beginning. But from the lawyer's point of view, once he's seen Egg Shen produce that little bolt of lightning between his hands, I'd be freaking out. Because up until that point, you think, well, like, I can't believe in magic. Why not? Zap. Electricity.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see what the actual court case would be. I bet it'd be a really cool thing to watch and sit in on. People giving evidence against Egg Shen and stuff.
Like fire and lightning bolts up and like, look, dude, this happened.
I think it'd be great. It really would.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. But that's a good point, actually, because it's like, you see him talking to this lawyer.
Yeah.
But you never actually really find out why.
Yeah. You just have to assume that whatever, well, with all the chaos that happens with the events they go on, the city suffers, you know, things are exploding, people are being killed. So someone's got to be held accountable, and it's Egg Shen.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of confused because, and this is me fast forwarding, towards the end, Egg Shen decides that he wants to take a long vacation and go back to the motherland of China. Well, not the motherland. He says, wherever he goes, China is with me, so he'll go anywhere. But if he's gone on vacation, Has the fuzz, the fez, the police, whatever you want terminology you want to use, they found him and obviously brought him to the lawyers because he needs a lawyer for a reason. He's been arrested or something. So I'd be interested to see how that panned out, if there was like a spin-off book. You know, he goes on his travels and the law chases after him and brings him back to account for his part in destruction of the city or whatever it might be. So there's a few kind of unanswered questions in it, but it doesn't take away any of the magic of the film.
Yeah, it'd definitely be interesting that way.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. You know, Egg Shen travels the world whilst being followed by, you know, authorities from around the world, and he's dodging it with his little bag of tricks.
Yeah. It'd be like a completely different version of Catch Me If You Can. Yeah.
There's Egg Shen. Puff of smoke and he's gone. Oh, every time we get close, he disappears, you know. He hides behind a basket or something. I did like, in the run-up to the big confrontation at the end, the good guys are given this elixir that Egg Shen makes, and it's one of those like traditional kind of like horror goblets with the dry ice coming out of it, so it looks like a really potent drink. And he's convincing them all to drink it because it would give them power, and he can see things that other people can't see, do things other people can't do. Essentially, it's a placebo.
What's in the flask, Egg? Magic potion?
Yeah.
Thought so. Good. What do we do, drink it?
Yeah.
Good. I thought so.
They're just having a drink. Yeah. But they instantly feel like I'm feeling pretty strong, pretty superhuman, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they're all in the lift waiting to go up to, or go down even, to face the bad guys. And they're all kind of like looking at each other going, yeah, you know what? Kind of like a testosterone moment, like a Top Gun scene or something. Feeling pretty good. And then it just doesn't work. Like, poor Jack, he can't shoot the gun properly. He can't attack anybody. He's just shouting at everybody. But it's a great scene. I love the combat between Rain and Wang. Because Wang, although he's considered the sidekick of the film, he's one of the best martial artists in the movie and gets some really good fight scenes.
Oh, and he's only about 5'2".
Yeah, exactly. He's a little titch. And he's doing that kind of jumping in the air and they're flying through the air for ages, hitting each other with swords whilst they're still flying, because that's normal for a human. And they do this a good few times, and then when Wang lands on one side of the room and Rain lands on the other side, Wang's just looking at Rain, raising his eyebrows to say, you see what I can do? Rain's just kind of like, wait a minute, this guy's human and he can do what I can do. It's kind of like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And the curveball of him throwing the sword while Rain's mid-flight and just takes a sword through the stomach. Yes, you can kill them. Once that happens, you know, they're not like immortal. You can kill these godlike creatures, and that's what they aim to do. But again, it's comedic. It's funny. Like, it really plays heavily in, like, the old style, like Dragon Ball Z sort of fight. You know, all the lines in the background moving quickly while they're having a combat scene or something. A lot of nods to different styles of filmmaking, but again, with a good comedic aspect behind it. Yeah, it's why it's so good.
Like you've already said, like, that's what kind of makes it, like, the sort of the comic relief, if you will, of Kurt Russell, of Jack Burton, being, like, absolutely clueless, and even though he's known Wang for, like, all these years, he's never experienced any of this stuff, and he's just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I've got no idea what's happening, but let's just go with it, because I want my truck back.
That's all, he just wants to get his truck. Yeah. I love when he's... when they escape for the first part of the film and they go back to the... I think they go back to Exchange Restaurant, I think, where they hiding out.
Yeah, they go back to his restaurant and he's on the phone.
He's on the phone to the insurance company, He says, I want to tell you about an accident and I don't want to hear hand a guard. Because, you know, that's what they say. If it was a godlike incident, we don't pay you. And he starts going off, you know, I've got the premiums. I pay like $6,000 for it every month or whatever. So the guy's got money, but he just hasn't got his truck. I just love it. I love it. So many good scenes, so many good characters. If you had to pick your favourite from the three storms, who would it be?
Lightning.
Oh, now is it because of the lightning or the visuals of them? I don't know.
Both, because the lightning makes the visuals.
This is true.
Just like, just when they come in, you know, when Jack goes into the brothel.
Yes, the white tiger.
Goes into the brothel. Yeah, yeah. I know you remember the name of that one, don't you?
Well, we obviously don't endorse brothels on this show, but you know, if you need to get your needs catered for, then you visit such establishments. I don't.
Anyway, so when he goes in, when we have the scene with the brothel, and when the three storms break in through the roof to go and take Miao Yin, and when it's that again, when lightning comes in, holding the lightning bolt, it kind of like slides down the lightning bolt,
it's amazing.
Like a slow motion fireman's pole, but just on one hand.
It's so cool, isn't it?
He's amazing.
I love the weapon that he has, you know, when they do the initial encounter in the alleyway, and he's got those like blades that spin in his hand through the power of electricity, and he's just
it just looks like two forks sellotape to each other spinning in circles.
I love it. It's a simple effect, but it looks cool. It looks really cool.
But we still don't know how he uses them.
No,
the last thing you see is him holding them
and spinning them. Yeah,
with his board.
But as they go past the screen, you don't see him actually use the weapons. Like you say, you don't know what he does with them. You see Rain, he has these two, like, they're like garden rakes, I suppose, or like, you know, a garden fork.
Yeah.
There's a mini version, and you just see him kind of like swinging them left and right and throwing bodies left and right, but you don't see Lightning use his weapon or lightning in the crowd as the camera's moving away. But you know he's lethal. You know he's lethal. I think for me, it's Thunder for me. Because again, the comedy aspect, if he gets in trouble or something's going to happen to him, he then expands his body to the point where it will explode. Yeah. Like a thunder clap would do, you know, a big element of thunder would be explosive. So I love that. Seeing his face turn to a big ball and his shoes blow open as his feet are expanding and stuff. It just looks funny. I love that. I love that. The Lo Pan character, obviously the main bad guy in it, the guy who's running the whole show, is portrayed by James Hong, who has been in a lot of films throughout the years. More recently, well, I say more recently, but fairly recently, he was in that R.I.P.D. movie with Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges.
Oh yeah,
as I think it was Ryan Reynolds' counterpart. No, was it Jeff Bridges? Either way, he played the human avatar of their ghostly selves. But for me, he'll always be Cassandra's dad in Wayne's World, Mr. Wong. I love it when he has to get dubbed by an American guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
When Wayne's having a fight with him.
I love that.
Ancient Chinese secret, huh?
I've done that loads of times, you know. How'd you get those clothes so white and fresh milling? It's an ancient Chinese secret. Wait a minute, Calgon. I love it. When he says, what is it he says? You're an excellent warrior. I think I've heard rumours that he might be getting a star in Hollywood, you know, for the Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
Because he's achieved quite a lot. He's been in quite a lot of films.
I've just pulled up his IMDb and, you know, he's been in a lot.
He's got quite a good career.
Even recently.
Yeah.
2014 to 2017, he was a character in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles called Ho-Chan.
Okay.
Done some voiceover stuff for Star Wars cartoons.
Nice.
Done some voiceover work for Regular Show, which is an amazing cartoon if you've never watched it. Obviously, you've got Wayne's World.
Yes.
Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah. Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about Kung Fu Panda.
He was in Big Bang Theory for a little bit.
He was.
He's done a lot of stuff.
He really has. And I just think it's up there as one of his best characters. Obviously, Lopan is a very iconic-looking character. Oversized suit, flowing cape, the white face, the long fingernail just on one finger, the big hat with the big, I want to say like a sewing needle going through it. It's like a big crochet like needle or something like that,
yeah.
So he looks peculiar, but he's very evil. And he's obviously done a lot of stuff because he's been around for centuries and seen a lot of stuff. But
I love it when he's his physical embodiment.
And the old man in the chair. The old
man in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
And then when he's turning to Lopan and like the light starts like coming out of his eyes and out of his mouth and his entire head starts to glow and just goes mental. It's so good.
I love when he's, I think it's when Jack and Wang are captured and he comes in and Jack says something like, I don't get it. Like, you weren't put on this planet to get it, Mr. Burton. Like, okay, okay. I will have my playthings. Okay. But it's a great film. For those of you who want to discover it, I can't recommend it enough. I really can't. And in the background right now, yes, I'm still playing it. Oh, it looks like it's the rescue scene.
Yes.
Which is all starts when Jack rescues there's a bunch
of my favourite ones.
Yes. There's a good scene there where a bunch of women have been captured and Jack and Wang go to rescue them. And Jack lands on top of the cage that these women are in. And they look up and they say, oh my God, Jack, how are you going to get us out? And he says, I have no idea. He literally just hasn't got a clue. He's got a gun and I need to get out, but he doesn't have a clue what he's going to do to get out. So it's thankful to Wang. Wang's the guy who helps him and everything because he's such a cool character. Yeah. But it's good. I love it. It's a great film. I can't recommend it enough. It's up there as one of my favourites of all time. It's up there as one of my favourite John Carpenter movies of all time. I'm hesitant on this sequel, remake, reboot, whatever they're going to use for it. It's one of those things. It's a classic film that doesn't need to be tampered with, but Hollywood being Hollywood and remakes being remakes, that's what is popular at the moment with a lot of people. I guess they're trying to bring a new audience into it by doing a remake with, you know, current actors.
I think, for me, anyway, if you're trying to get like the sort of like say 15 to 20 year olds to the cinema to see these films, why not do like 4K restorations?
That'd be amazing.
And, like, for example, when my kids are old enough, if they done a 4K restoration of Big Trouble in Little China, I'd be like, let's go and see this film.
It's a must, isn't it? It's a must.
Yeah. I'm not going to go and take and see some rubbish remake.
It'll be questionable CGI. I know originally it was intended for Dwayne Johnson. I think it still is. But the last time I looked into it, they said it's going to be a sequel, not a reboot, or a soft reboot, as they call it these days. I don't know. I guess time will tell on what direction
like
you go
Dwayne
down.
Johnson. I do like Dwayne Johnson as an actor. Like, he's done some good films.
Yeah.
I even liked the kind of reboot of Jumanji.
Do you know, it was interesting. I like the kind of video game aspect of it because it appeals to a modern-day audience. I do prefer the original for obvious reasons, but I like that they've took a classic story and gave it a modern twist. So, you can believe it. You know, you have an avatar that's on screen and it's video game-based, so it's a good option to go down. So,
and
he's
like I say, he's a good actor, isn't he? And he's done some good films, and, you know, I'm not knocking him at all. But
the man's work ethic is insane. He does so much stuff and he's still making new projects happen. You can't fault it. It's good to be busy. I mean, all I've got is my day job and a podcast. I'm not exactly changing the world. Well, I am in my own way, you know.
You're making a difference one podcast at a time.
Exactly. Maybe that could become your new tagline. You're changing the world one podcast at a time. Yeah. Copyright pending, so please don't steal my idea, listeners, if you can avoid it. Yeah, so as we start to wind down, I would like, if you could, to give me a mark out of 10, because it's got to be up there. I'm not going to go with these Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic's opinions because they just suck as far as I'm concerned. You can have that as an official statement.
It's got Metacritic's on like 53%. That means they're only giving it like 5.3 out of 10.
Yeah, it's not good, is it? It's not good.
No.
Where would you rank it?
For me, it's a solid 8.5.
Do you know, I was thinking the same. I was hovering between 8.5 and 9, but I fully agree. Yeah. It's up there. It's a high score. It's a great film. It's really enjoyable. And I can't sort of stress enough how important it is that you see it, especially the new generation. Discover a great comedy action movie with supernatural tones and great scenes. I'm guaranteeing you're going to enjoy the ride that you go on.
And for this new generation, Dave, who may have only seen Kurt Russell in The Christmas Chronicles.
Oh, what a movie.
Agreed. But I do think that they need to investigate his back catalogue and get
absolutely
in there.
He's got
watch
so
Big
many
Little China,
watch the thing, watch Escape from New York. Watch Tango and Cash.
Watch Escape from LA if you want. Tango and Cash.
Watch Captain Ron.
Watch Overboard.
Overboard Captain Ron.
Yeah.
Obviously watch Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Mm-hmm. He's in that.
There's something
for everyone in terms of a Kurt Russell movie. He's kind of covered all bases. Action, horror, comedy. Death Proof as well. As the killer race driver. You know, he's a great seasoned actor who's got a lot to offer. And I'm even Captain Soldier in that, even though it was actually a really bad movie, but I do kind of like it. It's like a guilty pleasure soldier.
Can't say I've ever seen it.
It's a futuristic sci-fi film, and he's like a mortified soldier who's, you know, emotionless but starts to develop emotions whilst he's helping people. It also stars Jason Scott Lee, who obviously rose to fame in the Dragon Bruce Lee story.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I suppose, like Universal Soldier, but more futuristic. I know Universal Soldier was considered futuristic at the time, even though it was set in like the modern day. This is a more of a futuristic film. It's, you know, set on another planet and there's like spacecraft involved and so on. But, you know, as bad as that movie is, again, in my opinion, I still enjoy watching it. So there's one to recommend. Watch Soldier if you want some kind of futuristic Kurt Russell-esque comedy. I say comedy, it's not even comedy, it's action. But you know what I mean. Watch it. Yeah, so I think we'll take from that what we can is that it's a fun, enjoyable movie and we do recommend seeing it. Big Trouble in Little China. Please, everyone, consider it, watch it. And do let me know what you think. If you want to get involved with the show, and I hope you do, all my socials are at DavyA10Mins. We've also added TikTok and Snapchat now, which is Give That 10 Mins. So there's plenty of ways to get involved with the show. Dan, how can people contact you?
People can find me mainly on Instagram and TikTok at Stuff of Kings. Yeah, I've got a Facebook page as well, but I've never really used that. So yeah, Instagram and TikTok are the ones. I do post sneak peeks, post finished products, post reels, videos, all that sort of stuff that Instagram forces you to do to get in the algorithm. But Instagram, TikTok, get involved.
And let's not forget, everyone, go on to stuffofkings.co.uk, aka via the Etsy store, and use DavyA10, is it, Dan? DavyA10?
DavyA10 for money off at the checkout.
Come on, money off, guys. What's not to like? Get on there, get some cool artwork, save some money, and spread the word that Season 3 is going to kick butt. Much like Jack did to Lopan, hopefully. It goes without saying, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. And not just because you're the sponsor, but because we get on really well and we have a lot of interesting topics to talk about. So, you know, thanks very much for coming on, Dan. It's always a pleasure. I hope you've enjoyed your time on the show.
I always enjoy my time talking to you. It's been a pleasure of mine to be here. And I look forward to being on in the future as well, if you'll have them.
I'm always welcome for anyone to be a guest, and especially reoccurring guests, because we've already established the groundwork. So come back on, we'll find something else to chat about, because there's a multitude of things we can discuss.
Let's see what the fans think about me coming back on first.
Yeah. Get in touch, everyone. If you want to hear Dan chatting to me again, then get on my Instagram and send me a message and let me know. I mean, let's face it, I'll invite him on anyway, but I'd like to know what you think. It's important that you guys tell me how it's going, and good or bad, I still want to hear it. So please, get in touch, let me know what you think, and I'll look forward to that one. But for now, I'm going to sign off. Dan, thank you very much as always. I will leave you to get on with your day. And listeners,
very much, Dave.
You're welcome. And listeners, have a great day. I'll be speaking to you soon, and take care. Bye, everybody.
We really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we, Wang?
No horseshit, Jack.
No horseshit.